Hi, this is Joe Castellano. Welcome to the Inside China Basin Baseball Podcast on the sportsvirus.com, featuring players like all-star catcher Buster Posey.
It's about, you know, just going out and trying to have passion for the game that I've loved since I was a kid.
And Ray Woodson is our regular guest, too.
A lot of ifs, but after a disastrous 2017, the Giants were not going to rebuild. They're at least trying to compete, while many teams in the majors are tanking.
Inside China Basin is brought to you by TPC Harding Park, the only public golf course in San Francisco offering golfers the opportunity to play where the pros play. We're also brought to you by Houseboats.com, your home for houseboat rentals on Shasta Lake. Coming up, we're going to hear from Eric Burns from MLB Network. We're also going to chat with Andrew Suarez from the San Francisco Giants. But first, I want to tell you about my favorite golf course, TPC Harding Park in San Francisco. Live in San Francisco and love to play golf? Visit TPC Harding Park and purchase your two-year resident card, giving you immediate savings on golf and other programs at the park. Cut your green fees in half by purchasing your card today. Visit www.tpc.com/Harding Park for more information. Now let's get to the conversation I had with Eric Burns from MLB Network. Well, Eric, really glad to have you on the show here. Want to talk some Giants here on this Giants podcast, but even other things going on around baseball. First of all, how you doing? I really like the fact that before we're doing this podcast, you were playing catch with your kid. I mean, there's no more pure way to think about baseball than playing catch with your kid.
Isn't that great? I mean, see, the funny thing is, Joe, is it's like, you know, I mean, at one point, and so he's six now, but I'd say, let's go back a year, and it was always me going, dude, hey, let's go out, let's play catch, let's go out, let's hit balls, hey, let's take some grounders, let's take some fly balls, and, you know, I think when you're five, you just don't really get it yet, right? And then,
no.
You know, the other thing is, hey, it's hard, right? You're not catching every ball, and you're not hitting every ball, and I think it's, you know, you could try to force feed your kids whatever you want, but ultimately, guess what? It's not up to you. It's up to them. They're going to decide what they want to do and when they want to do it. And I mean, it's amazing to think that, you know, now here he is like a year later and he loves it. And it's just like, daddy, catch, daddy, batting practice. He wanted, Joe, we were supposed to talk a half hour ago, right? He wanted 10 fly balls. He said 10 regular catches. He wanted 10 fly balls, 10 ground balls. But he had to get 10 in a row. So he couldn't miss any of them. And he had to make the proper throws back. And he's the one that's implementing this on him now, where it was like, you know, of course, you know, I tried to I don't want to say try to force it on him because that's definitely not it, but I try to encourage him at least. There was some, and I'm trying to think where I read it. Maybe, just recently. It's a famous quote, but I used it recently. It basically says that like a true leader is basically getting somebody to do what you want them to do because they want to do it. And, you know, think about that. Like that. That makes a lot of sense because if you could get anybody to do what you want them to do, especially someone who works for you, right? I'm like, hey, Joe, do this. If you work for me and I'm paying your salary and you're going to go do it.
Right.
But guess what? Are you going to do something because you want to do it? Or are you going to do something because somebody else told you to do it? It's only pure, it's only authentic, and it's only going to propel you forward if you want to do it.
Well, that's where passion comes in, and that's what you have. I mean, that, you know, that's interesting because you may have described yourself, at least in my mind, when you were a kid. I mean, the way, you know, you probably wanted to play catch, but the way I think of the way that you played Major League Baseball, sort of like, you know, with your hair on fire, I think that maybe you might have been suited for other sports. I mean, was there a time where you thought, oh, maybe I'll play this or that, or you could look like you could have been a hockey player with your attitude?
Yeah, but growing up in the San Francisco Bay Area in the 80s, we just didn't have hockey,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
The Sharks weren't here yet, but I would have loved to play hockey. It's funny because one of my best friends was a career minor league hockey player, and then he ended up being a coach. He coached for the San Diego Goals for a while, the minor league hockey team, and He works in the salt mines up in Buffalo, New York now, and lays brick during the summer. But just an awesome dude. I think baseball players and hockey players get along real well for good reason. I think, you know, one of the things that I think both sports are very humbling along the way. But, you know, as a kid, my dad was a 4-3 black belt of Kenpo karate. My mom was a super avid tennis player. So that's what I did growing up. I played soccer, all the sports. And now it's amazing to me, Joe. Like, you know, and even in high school, eventually I got down to it. It was football and baseball. And, I had to decide, I had to leave tennis behind. I mean, tennis was one of the first specialty sports, right? It was tennis and golf, pretty much, and gymnastics. Those are the three I could think of as a kid that, you know, those were the kids that had to do it year-round. I always loved team sports. It was I always performed better if I was doing something where I felt like there was a grander purpose than just doing it for myself. And so, you know, it ended up being football and baseball. And then, you know, eventually baseball was the one that I went with. But had I not played baseball, beyond high school, there's no doubt in my mind I would have played college football and then would have liked to see where that would have gone.
Well, when I think of you on the major league field, I mean, there's so many aspects of the game that, you know, you performed well at. But the one thing we always knew we were going to get as fans watching you on the field is that you were going to hustle no matter what. You know, you hit a ground ball, it could have been a routine ground ball, and you were going to bust it up the first base line. And the reason I bring that up is the last time the Dodgers were here in San Francisco, Cody Bellinger got benched by Dave Roberts. And it's not like he's not a hustling player. He's definitely one of the most talented players in Major League Baseball. There's no doubt about that. But he hit it in the triples alley, and he didn't get a triple. And, I mean, I just thought he should have been at third base. I know he got down on one knee when he made that swing. I'm just curious what your take was on that whole situation and just what you think when you see players that don't go 100% running out maybe the routine ground ball.
Yeah, that one was a tough one, Joe, because, you know, maybe I'm a little too close to the situation. I've known Dave Roberts for years, the Dodgers manager. Bob Guerin, I'm in regular contact with. 10 years ago, Cody Bellinger was part of the, I guess, probably 11 years ago now, but he was part of the Chandler Little League World Series team that came over to my house that I held a barbecue for. I've known the Bellinger family. That all said, I think I'm probably the perfect guy to ask because I can see every perspective.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. I actually didn't think it was that bad, but from DR's standpoint and Bob Guerin's standpoint, there was a ball that was hit like 2 weeks before that. It was down the left field line at Dodger Stadium, and it was one of those bloop pop ups, right? Like slam dunk double. Well, Cody hit it, and he didn't run. He just stood there, and I know what happened because it's happened to me before. He didn't see the ball. He had no idea where the ball was.
Oh.
And so, you know, he ended up getting a single when the ball dropped. And they were going to take him out of the game then. And because you got to remember this. Like, they've done it to Puig. And so you can't do it to Puig or do it to one of your other players, yet not do it to Cody because he hustles most of the time. So Bob ended up going up to, if I remember correctly, Bob went up to Cody. And Bob and DR had to talk about it. And he went up to Cody and basically said, hey, look, man, he's like, we're going to let this slide because you hustle all the time, but don't ever let that happen again.
Yeah.
And so then when that ball was hit in San Francisco, just like you said, in Triples Alley, and you take in the fact that he's the fastest player on the team. According to Sprint Speed on StatCast, he's number one.
I didn't realize that.
You're
okay.
You're telling me you hit a ball 421 feet, and you can't be on third base? No. You get your ass on third base.
Yeah.
And then it was Gregor Blanco who, it was the inning before, the inning after, whatever it was, but did the same thing in Triples Alley, and he ended up sparking a rally by going for a triple. So it made him look bad. So, you know, you add all that together, Cody won't make the mistake again. I can promise you that. Again, overall, looking at it and watching him, because we had the ISO cam on him, geez, it didn't look like he was loafing it either. So I can understand his perspective a little bit, but pretty much at this juncture in his career, which is basically his second full season, you just suck it up, you take responsibility, and you move on, and you make sure it doesn't happen again.
Yeah, I mean, there was definitely a gray area there. Let's get to the Giants, and before we even talk about how they're playing, here's the main reason why I wanted to talk to you, Eric, because I know you're a major proponent of having the mechanical umpires, the computer calling balls and strikes, and the Giants were deep into this really during the last homestand because Brandon Crawford and Brandon Belt both got into it with the umpires. I mean, more so Brandon Belt, because after the game, I mean, he talked about really the whole thing with Doug Eddings, the attitude and everything and getting called out on strikes to end the game. And Brandon Crawford dropped his bat and was told to pick it up, and that was kind of ridiculous. But these were pitches that on, the stat cast, when you're looking at it, when you're looking at the strike zone, they were not strikes. So it brings up the point, should we have computerized umps? Now, I haven't been in favor of it. I could be talked into it, and I know you are a major proponent of it. So does this kind of just add fuel to what you're trying to accomplish to get that implemented?
Yeah, I don't think there's any question. I mean, every night, though, like Joe, you're bringing up two instances that are local, and isolated here within the San Francisco Bay Area and within Giants fans, and those are the ones they're going to remember. But, you got to remember there's thousands of balls and strikes called on a nightly basis.
Right.
And they're missed every single night.
Yeah.
If you I don't know how this works, but I was wondering, if you could go to my mentions on Twitter, where you just, put in, at Burns22, and you go through, you scroll through my timeline, you'll find thousands. I mean, at this point, thousands of tweets directed at me regarding balls and strikes.
Wow.
You'll find at least a handful, at least five a night, that come from fans from all over the country. Because
wow.
the HBO piece that was done, the fact that I did the experiment, whatever, it's just, look, eventually it's going to happen. Whether it happens within, 2 years or 5 years or 10 years or 20 years, I don't know. But it's ridiculous that we would have this technology available to us, yet we won't use it. And the argument of people who are against it, the best argument at least, is that the technology isn't there, but they're wrong. And the technology is there. And so if the technology is there, basically, and this was as of 2 years ago when I did the experiment, they could be up to as much as a half of inch off. That's how much the technology could be off, right?
Right.
So human error can be as much as a foot. So think about that. Like human error, they'll be calling balls that are 12 inches in the strike zone, out of the strike zone, whatever. So And we're going to complain about a half inch now. So, and I'm not trying to get rid of umpires either. If anything, I'm going to add a position. But let's just give them the same technology that we have on our iPhones and that I get instant access to. That, I mean, we're talking, I'm here watching a Yankee game, for example. I'm 3,000 miles away from Yankee Stadium, yet, I get to see whether or not it's a ball or a strike, yet the poor umpire behind the plate can't. That's ridiculous.
Well, and I guess for the players now, everybody's going back and looking at it anyway, and then it just makes it worse for the umpire. And that's why I say I could be convinced. I guess I'll miss the human element of it, and I don't mind seeing a player argue with an umpire and an umpire having his own strike zone. But from a player's perspective, I mean, you played in the major leagues and I didn't. I mean, I would imagine that pitchers, position players, you've talked to them enough and knowing from your own personal experience that this would make it better for everybody, so that you wouldn't be arguing and you wouldn't be getting the wrong calls out there?
Yeah, I just want it right. That's it. And, as a player, Joe, the only thing we can ask for is a fair call.
Right.
If I took a strike, I took a strike. Oh, well, that's on me. Right? There's mm-hmm. a lot of times I stopped arguing. I didn't. The funny thing is I hardly ever argued throughout the course of my entire career. And I really stopped arguing when we had instant access, close access to the video, right? Where I'd go up, I'd instantly watch the video, I'd see it. And there were times where I was so convinced that it was a ball, and I'd go back and I'd look at it on tape, I'm like, damn, that was a strike. Right?
Right.
And so I sided with the umpires. And, but ultimately, I just want the right call made. It's like, you know, the fact that some dude's going to get a, you know, bigger strike zone than, you know, another guy would is ridiculous. All of a sudden, everything's subjective. You can't have a call should not be subjective. You shouldn't take into consideration how many years a guy has in the big leagues, or the fact that he earned that because he keeps hitting his spot, or the fact that the catcher set up down and away, but he missed up and in. But if a strike's a strike, a ball's a ball. That's it. And so the biggest opponents to it are going to be, I think, you know, first and foremost are probably catchers, because catchers are the ones that pride themselves on stealing pitchers, and catchers are actually getting paid, especially the really good defensive ones, on pitch framing.
It's
become
an
art. Yeah. And not only that, you know, teams are paying for pitch framing. So it's ridiculous that it's gotten that deep. And again, that we have this technology and we're not putting it to use at this point.
Well, here's what I think about it too. I think that if you went to the mechanical umps, then it sort of changes protecting the plate a little bit. Because right now, I think if you're Brandon Belt, he has so much confidence in what he knows to be the strike zone that he figures, well, you know, I can take that pitch on 3-2 and I know it's ball 4. Well, maybe not with an umpire. So he has to protect a little bit more. But if you have the mechanical ump, and you should be right about it, if you really know that strike zone, you don't have to protect as much. I mean, I would think you could say, you know what, I'm not going to get burned here because I really know the strike zone.
That's it. That's it. I think the other thing is, number one, the games are going to go quicker. No one's going to be arguing balls and strikes. There's nothing to argue. You know, at least about that. It's gotten worse. It's the worst I've ever seen it. The arguing of balls and strikes right now. We're seeing managers and players get thrown out at a historic rate. And even if they're not getting thrown out, the bickering's at an all-time freaking terrible rate. And I say that because guess what? The players and the coaches and the managers, they get to know whether or not it's a ball or a strike.
Yeah.
Right? So they have this information. So they're holding on to this going, you missed three calls in the third inning, then you just missed it. It's just like, is that fair to the umpire? If I'm the umpire, I told Joe West this. I said, Joe, I was at a golf event with him in Pebble Beach this winter. I said, why do you want everyone else to have this but you? That's not fair to you guys, man.
Right.
And, to be honest with you, he was all ears. He really was. I'm not going to go as far as to say that he was for the automated strike zone, but he was all ears. I promise you that.
Well, you make a convincing argument. By the end of this podcast, I'm probably on your side. Just a couple more things before I let you go, and I want to ask you about your book. But just on the Giants, looking at it right now, I'm pretty amazed that they are where they are, because they have no dependable starters without Bumgarner, without Cueto, and with Samardzija pitching the way he has. Yet, you know, they're getting way more offense. The Brandons have really come through. I mean, Brandon Bell is having a terrific season so far, and Crawford completely turned around his season in the month of May. So, you know, what do you think of this team overall, just looking at them?
I think, you see, like you said, start with the two Brandons. Brandon Crawford's having a great May. Brandon Bell has been locked in from day one of the season. I mean, these guys are they're coming into their own. I always knew that they would be great players. I always really believed in Brandon Belt having a monster year start to finish. I think this eventually could be that year. I think their pitching is horrific. It didn't start well, obviously, with, you know, Samardzija on the DL, and then Cueto was pitching lights out. He on DL. Obviously, Bumgarner was on the DL. It's just like, yeah, I kind of agree with you. Like, just the fact that they're hovering around 500, and still sort of in this, you know, in the race. The NL West is bad this year. We're not going to see three playoff teams. But all of them have dealt with a lot of injuries. And you know, I think that goes to show you that, you know, still one of the key things of winning a lot of baseball games is staying healthy as a squad, because the Diamondbacks have been depleted with injuries too. And I mean, you want to talk about fall from grace, man. I mean, they just lost 13 out of 14 after being the best team in baseball, like hands down, best team in baseball. I say that winning their first 10 series or whatever it was.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see how the whole thing shakes up.
All right, I want you to tell me about your book, but the thing that's amazing to me, Eric, is that you had time to do it, because, I mean, MLB Network, Pac-12 Network, setting a record for the number of golf holes in whatever hour period it was. All the things that you do, you're a busy guy, and you had time to write a book. Tell me about the book.
Well, it started about 7 years ago when I first started working for MLB Network. I was getting on a plane and flying, you know, 5-6 hours across the country, you know, and doing it a bunch. And I was going through kind of a real reflective time in my life. I had just finished playing baseball. My father unexpectedly passed away. I really kind of was just getting into fatherhood and trying to figure out what that really meant. You know, at the same time, I was going back and I was reflecting on, you know, a lot of the cool experiences, I think, that I had, you know, not only throughout the course of my playing career, but also growing up. And I really just kind of started writing. And I've always loved writing, Joe. Like, it's even in school, man, like it was the one thing I always believed that I was really good at. You know, and I'd say that because, I don't know, maybe like kind of like playing baseball, like I feel like I can get my emotions out, mm-hmm. You know, by writing. And I had absolutely zero intentions from the get-go to, you know, have this be a book. I was like, okay, I'm just going to start writing. And I'm going to collect these stories are really what they were in reflections. And, you know, eventually I'll figure out what I'm going to do with them. And the thought was, some kind of, I don't know, whatever you want to call it, something I would give my kids,
right,
to be like, hey, here's like a life guide manual. My dad did it for me. And I think that really got me thinking, when he passed, because he had like this manual, and I put some of it, a decent, you know, portion of it, into the book. But it was so cool to have when he was gone, and to go back, and it was kind of like, I forget what he called it. It was something like, you know, life, something along like life, you know, life lessons, thoughts, music, whatever, how my dad labeled it. But that's really what I was doing. And, you know, 7 years later, like there was so much stuff that went on, and basically it was, you know, the broadcasting career, the transition into Ironman triathlons, the crazy transition into that, and then into, you know, ultra marathons, which led me to Western States 100-mile endurance run. And I was about mile 97 of that run. And I think that was a point where I decided, I'm like, look, man, like I need to share these experiences. I need to share, first and foremost, I'm like, I need to share this experience. A buddy of mine had described it. He's done the race 6 times. He's like, look, Burns, he goes, this is going to be like living a lifetime in a day. And Joe, he could not have been more right, dude. It was a freaking lifetime in a day. And I wanted to share that with people. And if for no other reason than if just, you know, one person could read that, and not only read that, but read these other experiences, you know, throughout the course of my life that have helped, I don't know, I won't say guide me through, but it's funny because when I originally wrote all of these, it wasn't like, oh, here's the life lesson out of it. But when I was able to go back, when I decided I am going to write a book, when I was able to go back and look at it, I'm like, yeah, man, this is it. And guess what? I didn't always do the right thing, and I made a ton of mistakes, but I was able to learn from them. And it doesn't – look, I'm still constantly learning and striving to be a better person, a better father, a better husband. But at the same time, man, it was just like, yeah, I want to share this. And then if one person can draw motivation from it, if they can look at one of these life lessons, it's all worth it. And so if I sell – you know, 1,000 copies, or I sell 100,000 copies, or 1,000,000 copies. I don't care, dude. I really don't, because again, if I could be that one influence to motivate that one person to get up, get moving, get going, and figure out, you know, look, what's next with our lives? Because so often we become stagnant, and I think that's kind of the biggest message that resonates in the book. It's just that, look, we all deal with a bunch of shit. All of us, and all the time, and life's not always pretty. But guess what? The one thing we control is our reaction. How are you going to react? How are you going to continue to move forward? And that's really kind of, you know, what this became. And so
the epic list, life lessons from a human crash test dummy.
Wow, that sounds great. I mean, it really sounds motivating to me. I think a lot of people will get motivated by reading the book. I mean, that's outstanding.
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, I think there's a couple things that, people could take away from it. And I think one, obviously, is motivation. But I also think that, if you don't like, if there's someone out there that doesn't love, say, a motivational sort of book, the stories are epic enough. And funny enough where I think it'll garner some laughs. So I think in that sense, it's sort of a feel good, pretty easy to read, sort of thing. All the chapters, Joe, there's 129 chapters.
Wow.
And it's 497 pages, 129 chapters. And, within those chapters, I pulled out the quote unquote human crash test dummy life lesson. And it just, even if you just went through the life lessons, like if you have this thing by your bed and you're like, I'm going to check this out and just go straight to the life lesson, that's worth the book. But, the stories I think are kind of what make it.
All right. Well, I can't wait to read it. And it's always great catching up with you, Eric. I mean, you got so much energy. I mean, I loved working with you on Pac-12 Network. I hope we can do that a lot more in the future. And you're doing such a great job with MLB Network. It's just a blast to see you on there.
Awesome, Joe. Thanks, man.
That's former major leaguer and now broadcaster with MLB Network, Eric Burns. Coming up, we're going to hear from Giants lefty Andrew Suarez right after this. When it comes to Giants baseball, family memories are created one summer at a time. And the same can be said for your family vacation. How about an experience you will never forget? Shasta Lake is one of the most beautiful places to visit in California, and there is no better way to experience it than to rent a houseboat from houseboats.com. Jones Valley and Silverthorne Resorts are located on the Pitt River arm of Shasta Lake, unquestionably the very best area of Shasta Lake, and houseboats.com will set you up there with rentals ranging from the finest and largest houseboats available for rent in California to entry-level models for small groups or those new to houseboating. Houseboats.com has the best service, the best boats, and the best locations. Let's get that vacation planned. Call 877-468-7326 or go to houseboats.com today. Recently, I had a chance to catch up with Giants left-handed starter Andrew Suarez in the Giants clubhouse at AT&T Park. Here was that conversation. Well, Andrew, how's the experience been so far in the major leagues? I know you've bounced back and forth a little bit. So how have you handled that, and how much are you enjoying being in the rotation right now?
I mean, going up and down, it's not a big deal. I mean, I keep pitching. I keep getting to pitch, so it's fine. But, being up here, it's awesome. I mean, the guys here are helping me out, and, they're making the transition easy for me.
Tell us about that first call when you found out you were going up. It seemed like you might have downplayed it a little bit because Steven Duggar was telling me that he talked to you and you said, yeah, I'm going to San Francisco today or something like that. He said, well, you're going to the big leagues? Like, it's kind of a big deal to everybody else, but you sort of downplayed it. Is that true?
I was just getting called up. They didn't know if it was for sure or not, so I was just telling him, I'm going to be there for emergency just in case. But, once I found out for sure, I was more excited. I mean, I could see him saying that for sure. I was just normal when that happened. But once I found out, I was really happy. I called my family and I let them know to get their flights to come see me.
Take us through the emotions of taking the mound for the first time in the major leagues and, knowing that family's there and it's a big league stadium and everything like that. Was it hard to get through that first inning?
No, for me it was harder to to warm up when I was out in the outfield, just like looking at the stadium. But, once I got on the mound, I thought it was just like any other game. Yeah, it was normal.
Well, it seems like, so far you've been able to, use all your different pitches, just like you were doing in the minor leagues. So what have you learned about major league hitters? What are some of the maybe adjustments that you've had to make?
Just keep the ball down. don't throw it. And, like in the middle of the plate, just not make mistakes. And that's about it. I mean, I think if you can execute your pitches, I'll be fine.
What about the the veteran guys on the team? What have they told you? What are they teaching you about being a big leaguer so far?
Just same thing, pitching wise. Like, we just talk about baseball, and they're just telling me keep the, like, don't make many mistakes because, yeah, that'll hurt me.
The way the ball club was playing there for a while, you guys were winning series. I mean, five straight series wins. And then all of a sudden you go into Philadelphia, and that was a rough one. How important was it, do you think, to get that last win there in Pittsburgh, kind of, you know, finish off the road trip on a good note before the homestand?
I mean, yeah, it's huge. I think it's going to carry the momentum on for this homestand. And, you know, hopefully we just keep winning.
You guys have had a lot of guys that are coming up, I mean, a lot of changes. Austin Slater's here now. You were just talking to him. Alan Hansen, you know, players that are moving up and down. How encouraging do you think that is for the guys who are in the minor leagues and hoping for a chance?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just, you know, guys in the minor leagues, it's just they get to keep working hard. And, you know, they know they have a chance to get called up because you never know what happens. It's such a long season.
Do you get a feel when you go out there, like what's working, what's not working? I mean, is it in the bullpen? Is it when you're out there on the mound? I mean, you know, are there some pitches that you have to say, you know what, tonight it's just not going to be my night for that pitch, and I'll stick with the other ones?
Yeah, it's usually like in the first inning I'll know what's going on with my stuff, and, you know, hopefully I'm going to keep throwing it, and hopefully later on in the game I get it. But if not, I'll bang it for the day and work on it throughout the week.
What about the scouting reports you're getting here? I mean, I would imagine they're pretty good. A lot of video to look at as well of the hitters that you're going to face.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's way better than in the minor leagues. But, you know, it's great. Before my start, I'll go over it with whoever's catching me and with Kurt. And, you know, we just go through the game plan of what we're going to do with the guys.
Is it pretty helpful? I mean, you're noticing a lot of tendencies of hitters, even though you've never faced these guys. They've never faced you as well. So it's all kind of a new situation. But are you looking at pitchers that are similar to you, you know, that are facing these hitters?
Yeah, I mean, I try to watch a lot of lefties and, you know, see what they're doing against these guys, and they'll give me an idea of what to do. But, I mean, I feel like every day is different with hitters, so you never know.
When I first saw you, I thought, wow, it kind of looks like Andy Pettit in a way because you're just so calm out there. Who's the pitcher that you patterned yourself after growing up and even in the minor leagues?
I don't really know. I just try to watch whatever lefties, like all those good lefties. You know, I've been watching Bum. Kershaw, I mean, Derek Holland as well, and just a lot of lefties. Even now, I'm still watching lefties, like when there's on TV, like a lefty's throwing, I'm like, oh, let me see what he's, you know, what he's doing with these hitters, because I think I'm pretty much like any other lefty.
Yeah, I mean, everybody's got a different style. It's funny you mentioned, like, Kershaw. I mean, his delivery is so different. You know, Baumgartner, it must be interesting to kind of look at those and then incorporate what you're doing and the delivery that you have.
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty funky too, I guess. I don't know. People always, you know, give me crap about it. But yeah, I just always watch, like, see what they're doing, see like where they're hitting their spots, and you know what the hitters are reacting to after that.
Well, lefties are always a little unusual, right?
Oh yeah, for sure. We're always the weird ones.
How much are you guys looking forward to getting Baumgartner back? It looks like, you know, things are going pretty well. He's going to throw off a mound today. It's getting pretty exciting to, you know, get the ace of the staff back.
Oh yeah, I mean, it's very exciting. Just knowing that he's, you know, throwing bullpens and you know, everything is going great. It's awesome, and you know, we definitely do need him back.
All right, hey Andrew, thanks a lot for the time. Good luck.
All right, thank you for having me.
That's Giants lefty Andrew Suarez. Want to thank him and Eric Burns for joining us here on Inside China Basin. Join us again next week. We're going to catch up on the Giants farm system with some interviews from San Jose and Single A in the California League and Triple A in the PCL with the Sacramento Rivercats. For now, I'm Joe Castellano. Thanks for listening to Inside China Basin on thesportsvirus.com.